Hello, and welcome to Tori Machanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we're going to begin our journey through Kohelet. It's one of the most challenging and profound Sfarim in all of Tanakh. And I'd like to begin with a question. What exactly is this book? It's characterized by Chazal as a Sefer Chachma, a book of wisdom, along with Iyov and Mishlei. But what does that mean? Is it a series of philosophical ruminations, aphorisms that provide disconnected advice? Or is it actually a story in some sense? Aaron Sorkin, the guy who wrote The West Wing and The Social Network, he has this theory about what makes a good story. Every compelling story, he says, needs two basic elements. Someone wants something, and there's an obstacle in their way. That's it. Goal plus obstacle equals conflict, and conflict is what drives every great narrative. So let's think about this. What if Kohelet isn't just a philosophical treatise? What if it's actually following Sorkin's formula? What if there's someone who wants something, let's call it a good life, a meaningful life, a fulfilled life, and there are obstacles blocking their way? So the question is, what are those obstacles? Well, we haven't yet started our reading, but here's a sneak peek. There are two big obstacles that keep coming up in the Sefer over and over again. The first obstacle, nothing lasts. Everything is hevel, vapor, breath. Here one moment, gone the next. This is a theme that comes up over and over again in the book. And the second obstacle, life is unfair. Or, as our tradition puts it more precisely, tzaddik v'ra'lo, rasha v'tov lo. Good people suffer, and in the meantime, the wicked seem to thrive. The world doesn't operate according to the moral order we'd expect. Now you might think, okay, so this is philosophy. Someone is grappling with life's biggest questions. How do I find meaning when nothing lasts and everything seems unfair? These are abstract problems, we might think, that philosophers wrestle with. But what if I told you that these are not abstract problems at all? What if they're part of a story? Which story? I think it is the raw, felt experience of a specific person. A person dealing with a very concrete tragedy. And what if that person is channeling the experience of the very first human who ever faced these obstacles, Adam himself, after the murder of his son? That's what I want to explore today, because I believe Kohelet isn't just philosophy. It's also a story, a hidden story about grief, about loss, about what happens when the worst thing imaginable actually happens to you. Let me show you what I mean by taking us through the text, one pasuk at a time. Divrei Kohelet ben David melech b'Yerushalayim. So we're hearing from Shlomo HaMelech, but notice what he says immediately. Hevel havalim, amar Kohelet. Hevel havalim hakol hevel. Now we usually read hevel as vanity or futility, something meaningless, insubstantial. But hevel, while it appears five times in the pasuk, it's also a name. It's the Hebrew name of Adam's second son. And what does hevel mean as a common noun? It means vapor, breath, something that's there one moment and gone the next. Think about the tragic irony of that name. Adam and Chava's son is identified as, of all things, vapor. And then what happens to Hevel? His brother Cain murders him. This person, whose very name meant breath, had his breath taken away. He became exactly what his name suggested. He vanished like vapor. So when Shlomo opens with Hevel Havalim, is he just making an abstract philosophical statement about the futility of existence? Or is he thinking, harking back to that first great tragedy in human history, when someone named Hevel literally became Hevel? This reading gains strength when we look at the very next pasuk. And what I'm about to show you is that we're not just getting random biblical echoes. We're getting a systematic backward journey through Adam's story, from the moment of ultimate crisis all the way back to Gan Eden. Shlomo continues, Ma yitron la'adam b'chol amalo she'amal tachat ha'shemesh? What advantage is there for Adam in all of his toil? Notice the Hebrew carefully here. The pasuk is using specifically the word Adam to describe man and seemingly referencing the very first man in the Torah, Adam HaRishon. And then there's this word amal, toil. Where do we first encounter the concept of human toil in the Torah? In Bereishit in chapter 3, when Adam is cursed after eating from the Eitz Hadaat, from the tree of wisdom, the curse is B'zeyar ha'pecha tochal lechem ad shuvcha el ha'adamah ki mimena lukachta ki ha'afar atav el afar tashuv. Adam's amal, his toilsome labor, begins with this curse. What if the specific amal that's troubling Adam, it's not just general human labor? What if it's the work, the investment, the emotional energy that he put into his son Hevel, only to have it all destroyed by the most senseless violence? Here's where our two obstacles come together. Adam works to raise Hevel, but nothing lasts, because Hevel was murdered. And it wasn't fair. Tzadik v'ra'lo, because Hevel was the innocent one, the one whose offering Hashem did accept, yet he's the one who died. Imagine being Adam. You've worked to build a family. You've worked to raise your children, to create something meaningful in this world that Hashem has given you to tend. And then your firstborn murders your second son. All that amal, all that investment in Hevel's life, what was the yitron? What was the advantage? What was the profit from it? It all just vanished like vapor, like Hevel's name himself. And now watch how the next pasuk connects. Dor holech v'dor ba v'ha'aretz le'olam omedet. Generations go and come. The earth is what remains forever. This ties back directly to Adam's curse about returning to dust, to afar. People die, but the adama, the ground from which Adam was formed, that outlasts all of humanity. One generation goes, like Hevel did. Another comes, like Shait, who was born afterward to replace him. But the earth itself endures forever. There's something almost bitter in this observation. The ground is more permanent than the people who walk on it. The Adama from which Adam was formed will outlast Adam himself. Here we see both obstacles yet again. Nothing lasts, people die, but it's not fair in the sense that the earth outlasts us. And this pattern of cyclical futility continues. V'zarach ha-shemesh uva ha-shemesh, ve'el mekomo sho'ef zoreach husham. Here's the sun under which Adam now toils in his cursed existence. It rises, it sets, it rises again. The same meaningless cycle day after day. The verb sho'ef is particularly interesting. It means pants, or yes, gasps. Even the sun seems exhausted by this endless repetition. And this is the sun tachat ha-shemesh, under the sun. That's the same verse we had in Pasuk Gimel. This is the realm of Adam's cursed toil, where everything happens in cycles that lead nowhere. Nothing lasts. Even the sun's daily journey just repeats endlessly. Holech el darom v'sovev el tzafon. Notice the word sovev. Sovev, sovev, holech haruach v'al svivotav shav haruach. The wind, too, is trapped in endless circuits. Sovev, circling, circling, sovev. Everything goes in circles. Nothing progresses. Nothing arrives anywhere meaningful. It's all repetition. Like the futility of trying to hold on to anything in a world where nothing lasts. But then we get to something that should sound also familiar to us. Kol hanachalim hochim al hayam, v'hayam einanu maleh. Rivers flow, but the sea is not full. El makom shanachalim hochim, sham heim shavim lalachet. The place the rivers flow, they return to go again. Rivers flow and returning in endless cycles over and over again. But where have we encountered rivers before in the Torah? Let's look in Bereishit Perek Bet. V'nahar yotze me'eden l'hashkot et hagan, u'misham yipared v'ayu l'arba'a rashim. A river flowed out of Gan Eden and divided into four rivers. And those rivers had names. Pishon, which was described as Sovev, circled the land of Chavilah, where there was gold. Gihon, which was Sovev, circled the land of Cush, and there was Chidekel and Prat. Do you see what's happening? We're getting the same language. Rivers circling, flowing, but now it's all futile. Those rivers, they once seemed like such a blessing, flowing out from paradise to water the world. Now, they just flow meaninglessly to the sea and back again. They accomplish nothing. So here's what I want you to notice. We're not just getting random echoes of Adam's story. We're getting them in reverse chronological order. It's like someone looking backwards through time from the moment of ultimate crisis. Because think about it. The last thing that happened in Adam's story chronologically is Hevel's death. And that's actually exactly where Kohelet begins. Hevel Havalim, the name of the murdered son becoming the philosophical theme. And then we move backwards. Adam's toil, his amal after the loss. Then further back to the curse itself, death and returning to dust. Then back to the sun under which he toils. Then back to the rivers of Eden. It's as if Shlomo is rewinding the tape of human history from the moment of greatest tragedy all the way back to Gan Eden itself. And here's a crucial point. He's seeing everything through the lens of that final tragedy. This is Adam looking back at Gan Eden, but his view is a jaundiced view. It's through the lens of grief. Everything that once seemed wonderful, it now seems and appears pointless. Nothing lasts. And what's worse, the whole system seems rigged against goodness. And this leads Shlomo to a profound psychological observation. Kol hadvarim yegeim, lo yuchal ish ledaber, lo tispa ayin lirot, lo timalei ozen mishma. He says everything has become yagea, wearisome, exhausting. That's what grief does to you. Even the most basic experiences lose their ability to satisfy. Your eye can look at beautiful things, but it can't be satisfied with seeing them. Your ear can hear music, laughter, conversation, but it can't be filled with hearing because there's a void inside that nothing can fill. And the void left by the loss, this is the void left by the loss of your child in this case. When you're in this state, everything feels repetitive and meaningless. And Kohelet explains this, Ma shahaya hu shiya, u'ma shenasa hu shiyasa, ve'en kol chadash tachat hashemesh. History just repeats itself endlessly. Nothing is new. It's all happened before. The violence, the loss, the senseless tragedy, and it'll happen again. Nothing lasts, and life remains unfair. Yesh davar shiyomar re'ezeh chadash. Even when something appears new, hu kvar haya le'olamim, it's just repetition of what came before. Asher hayam lefaneinu, of murder? Cain already did that. Loss of a child? Adam already experienced it. The twin obstacles, nothing lasts, life is unfair? They're not new problems. They're as old as humanity itself. And then comes perhaps the most bitter observation of all. Ein zichron l'rishonim v'gam l'achronim shiyu lo yeh lahem zikaron. People die and are forgotten. The Rishonim, the first ones, the earlier generations, no remembrance remains of them. Even the Achronim, those who come later, they too will be forgotten by those who came after them. Lo yeh lahem zikaron im shiyu l'achrona. Think about this from Adam's perspective for a moment. His son Hevel is dead. Will anyone remember Hevel? Will anyone remember what he was like? What he might have accomplished? Or will he just fade from memory as if he never existed at all? Nothing lasts, not even memory. And now in Pasuk Yud-Bet, the narrative switches to first person. And here Shlomo identifies himself. Ani Kohelet, Hayiti Melech al Yisrael b'Yerushalayim. He says, I Kohelet, I've been king over Israel in Yerushalayim. As though he's saying, what was said earlier about Adam applies to me as well. But why would Shlomo HaMelech, king of Israel, identify so deeply with Adam's experience of loss? So here's where we need to remember something about Shlomo's own biography. Shlomo, if you recall, was a replacement child. His older brother, the first son born to David and Bathsheba, died as an infant. That child was, as you could say, conceived in the shadow of sin, born into a scandal. David and Bathsheba conceive while Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, is off in war. And this child dies as divine judgment. Shlomo was born afterwards, and there's an element of him being born to heal that wound, to be the son who lived, who would carry on the line. And just like Shay, by the way, who was born to Adam and Chava after the death of Hevel. Remember, when Chava names Shay, she says, Hashem has given me another child, Tachat Hevel, instead of my son Hevel, that Cain had killed. So Shlomo understands what it means to live in the shadow of a dead sibling. He understands what it means to be the replacement child who's supposed to make everything okay again. But the thing about a replacement child is that you can never really replace what was lost. The wound still remains. The twin obstacles, nothing lasts, life is unfair, they shaped your very existence. And like Adam, Shlomo had ultimate earthly power. Adam was given dominion over all creation. In Bereshit we see Radu B'digat Hayam, and every living thing he has dominion over. Shlomo, he ruled the greatest empire Israel ever knew, with chachma and wealth beyond any measure. But they both discovered, both Shlomo and Adam, that their power and achievements couldn't protect them from life's fundamental unfairness. And Shlomo says, V'natati libi lidrosh v'latur b'chachma al kol asher nasa tachat hashamayim. I set my heart to seek and to search out wisdom, to search out with wisdom all that is done under heaven. They both pursued chachma above all else. Think about Adam. His downfall was his pursuit of eating from a tree of wisdom, of knowledge. That's what he was after. Shlomo, when Hashem offered him anything he wanted, he asked for chachma, he asked for wisdom to govern the people. But look what Shlomo discovered about this pursuit of wisdom and chachma. Hu inyan ra, he says, natan elokim livnei ha'adam la'anopo. He says the quest for understanding becomes inyan ra, an unhappy business, an evil occupation. It's something that Hashem has given livnei ha'adam, to the children of Adam, la'anopo, to afflict themselves with. There is that name again, Adam. And what does this chachma reveal? Says, I've seen all the deeds that are done under the sun. It's all vapor chasing the wind. And that word Hevel again, like Hevel, the son of Adam, everything is as insubstantial as breath, as impossible to grasp as wind. And he says, the more you understand, the more you realize that both obstacles are real. Nothing lasts, and life truly is unfair. He says, some things cannot be fixed. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. Some absences cannot be filled. When you lose a child, there's a chisaron, a lack, a deficit that cannot be counted, cannot be measured, can't be made whole again. This is where the twin obstacles hit hardest. The unfairness can't be corrected and the loss can't be undone. And Shlomo then gives his personal testimony. Dibarti ani im libi lemor. Ani hine higdalti ve'osafti chachma al kol sh'haya lefanai al Yerushalayim. Libi ra'ah harbe chachma v'da'at. He says, I've achieved and acquired great wisdom, surpassing all people that were before me. More chachma than anyone before him, but then comes the devastating conclusion. He says, I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this is also but a chasing after the wind. The pursuit of chachma turns out to be as futile as chasing wind. Even the attempt to understand the difference between wisdom and folly, he says it's all rayon ruach, shepherding the wind. And then the final crushing realization, Shlomo, who asked for chachma from Hashem, says, Ki berov chachma rov ka'as. For in much wisdom is much stress. V'yosif da'a yosif machov. One who increases knowledge increases sorrow. This takes us right back to Gan Eden, to that tree Adam wasn't supposed to eat from, the Eitz HaDa'at Tov V'Ra. The da'at that seemed so appealing, that would make one wise, turned out to be a curse. The more you understand about the world, the more you realize how unfair it is. The more da'at you gain, the more machov, pain, sorrow you experience. Chachma becomes a burden rather than a blessing because it shows you clearly that the twin obstacles are actually real. Nothing lasts, and tzaddik v'ra'lo, the righteous suffer while the wicked prosper. This reminds me of, actually, many of my kids when they were younger. Terrible twos were not as much of a thing. I could get around that. But I found 3 years old, the weight of the world was on their shoulders. And it's kind of like the more they knew and understand the world, the more they felt that the weight of it was weighing them down. And perhaps that's a similar idea to what Shlomo is talking about here. What Shlomo is doing throughout this parak is channeling Adam's experience, looking at everything, even Gan Eden itself, through the lens of ultimate loss. It's not just any perspective. It's specifically a backwards mirror, a reverse chronology that transforms everything it touches. Because now those rivers that flowed out of Eden to bless the world, when viewed backwards from the moment of loss, they just seem like futile cycles. The sun that once shone on paradise, looking backwards through grief, it's just like a harsh light under which we toil. The Eitz HaDa'at that promised enlightenment through the backwards mirror of tragedy, it delivers only the painful awareness of how unfair life truly is. And this is grief's backwards vision, the way profound loss doesn't just affect the present, but it reaches back and reinterprets the entire past. So when you're buried a child, even your memories of Gan Eden become dystopian. Even paradise, when viewed through the rearview mirror of ultimate tragedy, looks like a setup for disappointment. And this is grief's jaundiced view of existence. When you've buried a child, when you've experienced the worst thing that can happen, everything else just looks different. Even your memories of better times, they become tainted by the knowledge of what's to come. But here's what I want to leave you with. But this parak isn't the safer's final word. It's the starting point. It begins with the darkest place precisely because that's where real chachma has to begin. Not with easy answers or shallow optimism, but with like an honest acknowledgement of how devastating life can be. Going back to Aaron Sorkin's formula, we have our character, which is humanity, represented by Adam and channeled through Shlomo. We have our goal, a meaningful, fulfilled life. And we have our obstacles, nothing lasts, and tzaddik v'ra'lo. And now we have our conflict, our story. The question is, how does this story resolve? I would say that if Shlomo and Adam can find meaning and purpose even here, in this place of ultimate loss and disillusionment, then that's quite a litmus test. And then you found something valuable that might actually be able to withstand both the passing of time and the unfairness of the world. So that's the journey Kohelet is inviting us on. It starts with Adam, after the murder of Hevel, in a world that suddenly seems meaningless, where all our achievements feel like vapor, like breath, and all our chokhmah brings only pain and sorrow. But it doesn't end here. The Sefer will eventually offer, hopefully, a way forward, a synthesis that can both hold the reality of loss and the possibility of meaning. But first, we have to be honest about where we are in a world where rivers flow in circles, where the sun rises and sets on endless toil, where even our greatest wisdom can become a source of pain. Only from that place of honest acknowledgement, from there can we find our way to live in this transient world that can seem so maddening. Only from a place like this can we construct an outlook that might actually endure in an ephemeral world. Thank you for studying with me. Today's study is dedicated by Helen and Moshe Sassover in memory of their beloved father and grandfather, Ted Ordon, Mordechai Ben Ephraim, and Miriam Golda, in commemoration of his 10th Yahrzeit. His family is forever grateful for his devotion to family, vision, courage, and optimism. May the merit of our collective learning elevate his neshama and bring unity and peace to Klal Yisrael. Thank you for the opportunity to study together.